It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're hearing Alte Uhr by Hans Huber, one of the nearly 900 folk tunes from Wisconsin that are now part of the National Recording Registry at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C.
The songs in the collection were recorded between 1937 and 1946. They offer a snapshot of our state's oral and musical traditions of the time.
What does the collection teach us about the people of Wisconsin? We have folklorist Jim Leary, professor emeritus of folklore and Scandinavian studies at UW-Madison and author of the book Folk Songs of Another America. Also with us is Nikki Saylor, director of the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress and a former student of Jim's. Jim, Nikki, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Jim, I want to start with you. You've said that this collection of Wisconsin folk songs is the most diverse and equitable and inclusive folk song field collection ever made for the Library of Congress. What makes it so distinctive?
Well, in the first half of the 20th century, when a lot of the field recording was launched under the auspices of the Library of Congress, there was very much an emphasis on English language songs mostly Anglo-Americans and African-Americans, a lot of it in the East, the South, and a little bit into the West. But there wasn't really much attention to all of the diverse languages and songs of immigrant peoples. And American Indian songs were also kind of siloed away, the work of certain anthropologists and ethnomusicologists. But the Wisconsin Folk Song Collection brought all of that together, and it also did it at a period when there was there were ongoing attempts to downplay the pluralism of America, to kind of force assimilation and attack diverse languages. And so it was kind of a bold and visionary deed by these song collectors to capture the whole.
So breaking down some silos in music, Nikki, you know, with hundreds of recordings now archived in the National Recording Registry, what impact does that have on documenting Wisconsin music through the ages and the stories of our state?
Well, I'm really excited to see this collection get this kind of national attention. You know, Jim and I have worked with it and known about it for a very long time. And we know how unique it is and how special it is. And so for the National Registry to include it means that just a lot of other people are going to get exposed to the music. And the fact that the Mills Music Library has it online makes it even better. So people can just listen and hear a wide breadth of recordings.
So do other states contribute collections like Wisconsin's in the National Recording Registry?
The registry has recordings from all over the place. At the American Folklife Center, we are what's called an ethnographic archives. And so a lot of what we have are field workers like Helene Stratman Thomas and Sidney Robertson Cowell, who went out and recorded people in their communities, singing the songs that they sing, telling the stories that they tell in their communities. And then and sometimes they would take pictures. So there's some pictures of the Wisconsin Historical Society of some of these performers. And so these ethnographic materials are then, you know, donated to our archives for, you know, safekeeping and preservation and access.
Do you have a specific idea of what constitutes, quote unquote, folk music?
There's been a lot of debate about that over the years. But you know, fundamentally, it's music that's rooted in some kind of culture or a mixture of cultures in a region, and it happens in an informal way at the grassroots level. But of course, in our wild and crazy world with, you know, migration and sound recordings and mass media you know, you have all sorts of mixtures and that sort of thing. But it's fundamentally it's kind of the grassroots music that happens, the musical vernacular of distinctive locales and cultural groups.
Nikki, it sounds like that question perhaps has been debated in classrooms many moons ago for a long time.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, let's listen to part of a song here from the collection. This is L'America è tanto bella. So what I understand, Jim, is that it is sung in Italian by Mr. Thomas Sant'Angelo, recorded right around August 9th, 1946, near Cumberland, Wisconsin. What else can you tell us?
Well, in the Cumberland area is the largest rural Italian settlement in the United States. Immigrants from Abruzzo and Molise came to work there in the late 1880s, and Tom Sant'Angelo, as well as Ambrose DiGidio and two other singers who were on this recording, were children of those immigrants. And it's an immigrant song. It's America is so beautiful. Italy is so small. It's a man saying, you know, I'm off to America. I won't return. And then there's a second verse, subsequent verses, where a young woman who's in Italy says, "Mother, give me my dowry. I'm going to America. We won't see Italy anymore." And it's obviously it's one of the many songs of immigration.
Yeah, I mean, it was recorded a year after the end of World War II. So America is emerging as this economic powerhouse, political powerhouse. You know, how can we view this folk tune in the context of larger events in history?
Yeah, these recordings were made from the late 30s, and then there was a little hiatus during wartime because of restrictions, and then again recorded in 46. And many of the people who sang for, especially for Helene Stratman Thomas, were descendants of countries that had been occupied by the Nazis. And so there were, you know, there were Norwegians and Dutch and French people and Belgians and, you know, they invested some of their songs, I think, with, you know, a powerful sense of love for their home country, the country of origin, but also pride in being in the United States. And you know, it's a kind of a little snapshot, I think, of how it's possible for people to love their homeland, but also to be thoroughly Americans without denying their roots.
We're talking about Wisconsin's folk music roots with Jim Leary there, Professor Emeritus of Folk Life at UW-Madison. And Nikki Saylor is here, Director of the American Folk Life Center at the Library of Congress. We asked WPR's host of the show, Simply Folk, Sheila Shigley, if collections like this one might be important outside of the academic arena. And here's what Sheila had to say.
Those of us who perform folk music, who love folk music, who spend a lot of time in it, we want to hear what was going on in the past. These are the roots. They're the source. It's so full of exciting things that you didn't realize were exciting until you go back in time and listen to a recording from, say, 60 years ago and hear just the amazing quality of that musicianship. And by musicianship, I'm talking about the heart.
Talking about the heart, Nikki, how do you reflect on the heart of this music?
I think the heart of the music is really evident. And, you know, not only do people who appreciate folk music want to go back and listen to these recordings, but family members want to go back. So, you know, we'll have next of kin for recordings such as this come into our research center at the library and want to, you know, hear these original recordings. It means a lot to them personally and to their community.
We're going to hear another song from the collection. This is part of a tune called Lullaby. It's performed by Margaret Eagle, also known as Laughing Eyes in the Zuni language. Jim, what can you tell us about this lullaby?
Well, this is a song that was sung by a woman from Zuni Pueblo and was an internal migrant of sorts in 1933. In Chicago, the Century of Progress, a World's Fair was happening, and they had a number of so-called Indian villages, bringing together people from the woodlands and the plains and the Southwest. And that brought together Ho-Chunk, or Winnebago people, as they were known, in Chicago, along with Margaret Eagle. And since the 1920s in Wisconsin Dells, there had been at Stand Rock first some powwows, and then eventually the Stand Rock ceremonial. And Margaret Eagle went to sing there from 1933 to 1972. A lullaby, of course. Lullaby is a genre that's found, you know, throughout the world in so many languages and cultures. You know, beautiful songs for children, and this is a great example. And Margaret Eagle was actually, her name is Idaki, she was one of a number of singers recorded in 1946 in the Dells that included some Oglala Sioux, but mostly Ho-Chunk singers.
I wonder, were there other first-person primary source interviews with her?
There was an ethnomusicologist named Charles Hoffman who did field work all that summer of 46, and he recorded about a dozen songs with her. And Nikki spoke earlier about relatives, descendants of singers seeking recordings from the Library of Congress. Margaret Idaki, or Margaret Eagle's grandson, Fabian Fontenelle, Zuni, and his wife, Shelley Morningsong, had known about this singing but had never heard it, and were able to get a CD sent by the Library of Congress with 12 songs, and they themselves are performers and put out a record maybe about 6 or 7 years ago that includes a little commemoration of this Margaret Idaki, or Margaret Eagle, as she was known.
It's so wonderful to hear how bits and pieces of this history are preserved, and they come together as the future generations want to preserve it as well.
You know, every place in the country is in its own way the center of the world. But when one looks at generalizations or popular conceptions about what constitutes American folk music, you know, nobody would think of, you know, the descendants of Italian immigrants in rural Wisconsin, or Welsh singers in rural Wisconsin, or a Zuni internal migrant to southern Wisconsin. People are looking, you know, to the southern Appalachia or the Mississippi Delta or something like that, or to cowboy songs. But, you know, there's plenty going on in many, many parts of the country. And I think that it's really important to champion of a broader and more diverse, equitable, and inclusive notion of what constitutes the folk music of Americans.
Jim and Nikki, thank you so much for sharing this folk music heritage with us.
Well, it's been a treat.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
That was UW-Madison Professor Emeritus and Folklorist Jim Leary and Nikki Saylor, Director of the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. We're hearing Pik Shotisha, played by Otto Rinzlisbacher on the violin.